Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey friends, welcome to the Tennis and Bigos podcast. I am your host, Andre, and I'm here with Owen. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. I have not been watching a ton of tennis because after the Australian Open, I kind of burnt out for a while. But yeah, still been kicking around on Twitter. The ATP actually put out some good content. Many, many kudos to the writers who came up with that kind of Truman Show-esque bit with all the players saying everything was fake. And I'm sure we'll talk about that more. But yeah, I've been doing well.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like there's a good time to burn out in a sense, just because like there isn't much that happens between the Australian Open and then we're going to have the Sunshine Double. And all of this is honestly a bit of filler before the clay season starts. I mean, obviously the Sunshine Double is really important. Those are two really, really big tournaments. But it's been a while that just kind of feel a bit out of place, but in a weird way, just because those are two big tournaments. I don't necessarily wish them out of the calendar, but at the same time, it's like you can't really put them before the Australian Open as tune-up events because who's going to travel from Miami to Indian Wells to Australia? And I mean, it's just not the same conditions. It just doesn't help. And then after that, it's like just a whole mess after the Golden Swing, which is like a kind of mini clay court season, which is kind of becoming weaker and weaker as time goes by, I find. Like, unfortunately, not as many big players are deciding to go. Even Acapulco has switched to a hard court event from a while back, just to kind of try to attract more players before the Sunshine Double, really. So
yeah, I criticized the Sunshine Double last year and got a lot of hate for it because my rationale was so we've just had the Australian Open and we've just had a bunch of hard courts at the end of the previous season. Now the next major is on clay, so why are we still playing on hard courts and trying to pretend that these tournaments are important when there's like no major coming after them on the same surface? And I get that they're worth 1,000 points and this and that, but I said something to that effect and like people got really angry. And yeah, it's interesting. Like, we wait so long for the like 2 weeks for the off season to go by, and then we get the Australian Open, and then it kind of feels like there's another off season, especially now that I don't really have the bandwidth anymore to watch smaller tournaments. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to minimize those are really important for a lot of players, but I just don't have the bandwidth to watch those anymore, so I'll skip that, pay like peripheral attention to the Sunshine Double, and then I'll be back in for clay season.
Yeah, like tennis is interesting just because like it's always a problem with the sport in general, I guess, because there isn't necessarily like an actual structure. We sort of like made a structure out of the four Grand Slams because they kind of became de facto like biggest tournaments in the world. You know, like we kind of can see there's like the clay season kind of leads up to Roland Garros. There's an almost non-existent grass season that leads up to Wimbledon. And there is like a slightly comparable North American hard court season that leads up to the US Open. But that's not really exactly what happens, because then after that, we kind of have like those weird lead up tournaments to what, the ATP finals that only 8 players get to qualify for. And then Davis Cup that is like kind of losing up their importance nowadays. And just because of the crazy format and then we have like obviously this part of this season, which is like the Golden Swing, which is who's going to play on clay in South America when you can just remain in Europe, where most of the players live anyways, play on hard courts, where most of the players are actually good at anyways, and then go up to play what is called like the second Grand Slam of the season, which is the fifth Grand Slam rather, at Indian Wells. So it's just like, it's a bunch of like weird stuff, but I guess we just kind of have to live with it and take it a tournament at a time in a sense.
Right. I mean, I am glad you mentioned the fifth Grand Slam, though, because, like, I don't pretend that this is kind of where my beef with the Sunshine Double comes in. Like, I don't pretend that, like, each part of the tennis season is part of this, like, perfectly structured, like, narrative that builds to the majors. Like you said, the golden swing makes no sense, right? Like, or it makes sense in the sense that, like, the next major is on clay, but it's still so long away that, like, and there are big hardcore tournaments before that. But then, so I get it from that standpoint. But then people say, like, oh, yeah, Indian Wells is the fifth slam. And I'm like, look, not only are you worth half the amount of points, but, like, again, you're not building to anything bigger. Like, it's, like, you are not a major. So when people are, like, when people say things like that, I get a little annoyed. But
yeah, I think the whole idea of like the fifth Grand Slam, I think it just kind of has to go because there's only four. And if you want to make a fifth one, like, I mean, either make one or don't call it that because it's just not what it is. Although I get the idea because Indian Wells is like the site is so huge and everything is so massive that it kind of feels like a Grand Slam in a sense. But at the same time, as you said, like in terms of the actual, I guess let's just put another word I don't like, but the prestige of it, it's just not as much as like the other four, right? So at least
trying to get me riled up before we even get going.
Yeah. I mean, you really do need a one-headed backhand to win an Indian Wells. Like, I'm just gonna say.
Okay. Right, and I think like all four majors should be on grass as well, right?
Yeah.
Is that the next thing you were gonna say?
Yeah. And Silver Volley has to make a comeback.
Oh, yeah. You know what I actually think? I think you should lose a point if you don't serve in volley, just like in UTS. Like, everyone plays the Uno cards at every match. And so if you serve and you stay back at the baseline, you've already lost.
Yeah.
I think that would make tennis a lot better.
Right? Yeah, like, you have to always serve a volley at least once per game. Otherwise, you're going to lose a point.
Did you see that they disqualified Gael Monfils from UTS? Like, do you know what happened?
I don't care about the UTS. I like some exhibition events. The UTS, I just don't have the patience for it. I'm sorry, whoever people likes them, I'm just not into it.
No, I agree. I like despise it. But I saw like some news that like they disqualified Monfils, which is weird because it's an exhibition, and they seem kind of very high on like they want you to break rackets and yell at people. So I'm curious what he did to get himself booted out.
Maybe he was playing too conservatively.
Right? I don't know. Maybe he didn't serve in volley. Yeah. And Patrick Mouratoglou we should do an episode on Patrick at some point. Like,
we should, yeah.
Like, is he total tennis? Like, does he deserve to call himself the coach? Or is he actually responsible for Simona Halep? Like,
wow.
Like, doping? And is he, like, just, I don't know, doing the tennis coaching equivalent of like sleeping around.
Wow.
I don't know. It's very interesting with him. I'm not quite sure whether he's an expert or a clown.
Yeah, it's tough to say. Maybe he sits somewhere in the middle. I don't think I wouldn't classify him as coach of the year. Maybe never, but maybe he can bring players around. I mean, I feel like he's got the, if not to go too deep into Mouratoglou now, but I do think that at the very least he's got the basics right, so like he can kind of bring out players from like, you know, training and like just give like a nice foundation. But I don't think that he's the coach that's gonna like bring you to the elite level and break to the top 10 and win a major. I don't think that he's that kind of coach. But
right, I mean, yeah, like he did work with Serena for a while, and Serena was very successful during that period, but I feel like that could just be Serena being Serena, and like,
yeah,
you get the worst coach in the world and she would have won a lot. I mean, yeah, like Patrick is weird because it seems like he works with a lot of very successful players, but then there are also moments where it's like, I question whether he has any idea what he's talking about. Like, there was a clip a while ago before the last Djokovic Nadal match at the 2022 Roland Garros. And he's like, look, Djokovic's peak level is higher even on clay. And if you look at the head to head on clay, yeah, Nadal has won a lot, but like Djokovic has also won a lot. And it's like, I think their play head to head was like 19-8 at the time. And it's like, and he was like talking like it was even. And it's like, yeah, dude, I think if the difference in their Roland Garros titles is like 12-2 or like 13-2, like, I don't think they have the same peak level. But yes, sometimes he just has really weird stuff.
Yeah, I am of the belief that Patrick just says stuff so that people can be so mad at him that he's just gonna get a lot more famous because of that. So he just kind of finds a way to be back on every single media outlet every time.
I think you nailed it. He's like an engagement baiter, like that Zverev tweet as well, where he's like, if I could give him one word, it would be resilient or something. Like, there's no reason he tweeted that.
Yeah, no.
Like, stir up some outrage and get like 10 new Twitter followers or something.
Yeah. Patrick's PR is definitely an interesting case of, but why?
I would be curious if someone did like a mega profile on him. Like, someone to like Marotta Glue Academy, and they like, I don't know, observe what he eats for breakfast and like, is he actually telling the players anything helpful? And look, I'm sure he does. Like, obviously, he knows his stuff, or he wouldn't be in this business.
Yeah, for sure.
As deeply as he is, but I don't know. I think there's just something about him where it's like, I can't quite take him seriously.
Yeah, I feel like a good journalist that I think would write a piece that I would love to read about a person like this would be Ben Rothenberg. I think he would be the perfect writer. For a person like as not contradictory, but like, I mean, incendiary, I guess. I mean, I don't know what words to say, but like a person like Marta Glu that causes a lot of stir around tennis Twitter. Yeah.
And you know, Ben wouldn't like pull any punches either. Like he'd go in and open with like, you know, a lot of people think you're a hack. What do you say to that or something?
Yeah.
Like,
I would love to see that piece being written. The guy that I think would write perfectly about him in a more serious tone. Well, not that Ben isn't serious, but like probably be a little bit more diplomatic about it would be Matt from he used to write for The Racket. It'd be a really good, if he hasn't written about him yet, because he did a lot of stuff, right? But
another thing we should do at some point is like an episode on like the best tennis writers and tennis writing, and we'll just like talk about our favorite pieces. And I'll talk about Grant Lund for like half an hour straight. I don't know. It'd be fun.
I think it'd be a good episode for you to lead then, because I guess you have been reading a lot more tennis stuff than I have in the past. But yeah, speaking of writing, I guess you've mentioned something really interesting in the beginning, which is the ATP's best content of the decade, of the century, maybe ever, that they've ever put out, the ATP season, where it was just hilarious. They obviously kind of mirrored it around like something sort of like The Office in a sense, but in a different way, obviously. But yeah, honestly though, like, I feel like that was, if TV was something remotely like this, I think if Breakpoint was remotely like that, it would have been amazing. As I tweeted, I guess, from the Tennis and Beagles account, it's like, it's tough to make a comparison because like one is very clearly a parody. And the other one is kind of trying to like bring them into their real life, you know, mindset to tennis and whatnot. But I think somebody actually replied about it. It's just like, oh, if you're only talking about the mental focus and like how exhausting it is to play tennis, like it gets old, it gets boring. So it's like, that's, and actually that person, I don't know if it's he or she at this point anymore, I don't even remember it, who tweeted that, but they got a point. I mean, if every episode is going to be about how hard it is to be a tennis player and how you have to focus and how stressful it is mentally, I mean, I get it.
Yeah. And how if you hold for 1-0 at the start of a match, like you've already won or whatever. I totally agree. Like, imagine if like this had just been like the cold open of Breakpoint. Like the first scene is just a joke. And it's like, all of this is fake. And then, you know, they play the intro and then they cut to like actual stuff. That would have been hilarious.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, major, major kudos and congratulations to everyone who wrote on that video. It was hilarious. I think my favorite part was like Djokovic's talking head, where he's like, yeah, like I really try to bring him to life. And he, he has the perfect emotion where he's like, you know, I'm just like, what would Djokovic feel?
Yeah.
Real person. And he just has this very slight eyebrow raise, and it's just like absolutely perfect.
He was amazing.
It's like 90% serious and 10% I'm in on the joke. And like, obviously everyone was in on the joke, but it was, and like Runa sucking the lollipop, and team mocking the grunts. Oh, absolutely brilliant. It made me laugh.
I mean, I couldn't believe how they got the players to be so good on this one. Because normally if you do like games there, I think this is so original that even the players are like, oh my gosh, this is actually really fun. Because there's no way. Every time that you see stuff like that, like every once in a while you're going to get like that little, you know, cringe, slightly awkward joke because like, or a smile, because you kind of have to make it look fun. But at the same time, it's like, this one, man, like the way that they got Murray and Djokovic, Gaël Monfils was amazing. He's like pretending to be like completely clumsy.
Man, but he's like the most athletic guy.
Yeah, exactly. That's so funny. And the pause that Djokovic takes, like before he goes, like, if he was a real person. And he's just like, look at the camera. Oh, that was so good.
Perfect. Yeah. And I wonder if one of the reasons why this works so well is that like tennis players are so media trained and told, like, you know, don't give anything away. And so maybe the way to get them to open up is have them play other people. Like, sure. So like none of it is authentic. And then they can actually show their personality while being someone else. I don't know if that was the reason why it works, but it would make sense.
Yeah. And in terms of like Netflix, I feel like, not to crap too much on like whatever, I feel like they kind of show the personal aspect of the players somewhat well. Like I got to see some of them, but I feel like one of the things that actually make this particular piece of content really shine is that they actually had Djokovic and Murray in it, and they had like really top players to like join in on the fun and whatnot. And I feel like, yeah, you could make an episode about like one or two, three players, but could you not? I don't know. Do you really have to? I feel like you could kind of follow more players around and just kind of like consecrate like some more time about them and just try to give them to life. But maybe what they're truly missing is really how to make the tennis come to life. I feel like that's one of the points that you give, you said about the 1-0. I feel like that there is a point where they could start talking about like tactics and things like that, and just trying to explain, just get a coach on and just be like, well, how do you make a player go from like top 20 to top 10, like, and stuff like that, like. How do you see potential? Like, what is a good forehand? Things like that. Just, I don't know. And analyze a match. Like, just get the rights. They're already on ATP, right? So in the WTA, just get the rights for a random match from the past and start analyzing it or something. I feel like that would be great. I feel like there could be so much good potential content to, you know, and make it a little bit more lighthearted too. I like the lighthearted parts where like Matteo Berrettini is like talking to his family and whatnot, but I feel like I'm not sure if they should be taking themselves too seriously, or are they taking themselves too seriously, or there's a balance to strike over there. It's hard for me to tell. I'm not like a professional in this entertainment industry, but something is just missing that this like little ATP season thing had that Breakpoint just doesn't. And I can't really explain what it is.
Dude, you are speaking my language. That, like, everything you said there, I agree with. Like, and yeah, I think Breakpoint, in terms of breaking down a match, and like, no one is asking them to get too sophisticated, right? Like, there are ways to talk about a match that are very obvious. Like, you have Djokovic playing, like, let's say a big server. Get a big server and talk to them and ask them to tell you about how every match they play, 90% of their first serves are going to win them the point. And against Djokovic, it's down to 60%. And they're like, and the ball is coming back at their feet and it's uncomfortable. Like, that's very easy to understand. Yeah. Or talk about like Nadal breaking down backhands because he's lefty and he's got the spin. Like, it's not rocket science, even if you've never seen tennis before. And they just didn't even try. And yeah, your last point about like, yeah, Breakpoint is just missing something. I think it's missing a bunch of things. But yeah, you're completely right that this ATP video just had something that Breakpoint did not. And I'm trying to figure out what that is. And I don't know. I think this ATP video just knew what it was doing. Like, they they were like, we're going to make a funny thing. And then they made a funny thing.
Yeah.
And a break point is like, let's show that tennis is hard. And let's show the people who aren't necessarily winning. But then we have to show the people who are winning a little bit. And then, but then we, there's this new exciting person. And there's also this person who's really struggling. And we have to show all of it all at once. Like, I think they just needed to pick a mission statement and go with it. Like, let's ATP video was like, let's try to be funny. And I think Breakpoint was like, let's try to show everything everywhere all at once, movie reference. But I think had they said, okay, let's show the athletic part of it, then you make like the best highlight reel ever. And it's probably really cool. Or if they're like, let's show the mental side of it, then you actually talk about the scoring system and the grind instead of just having people say repeatedly, it's so hard. And that's probably great. I think by kind of trying to do everything, they accomplished nothing.
Yeah. I almost feel like they could just have like a person like Andy Roddick and then give me someone from the WTA, say like Jelena Dokic from the Australian Open, who's really good, like as an interview, or Andrea Petkovic, who's amazing, by the way, as well. Just have them like be the hosts on the show. Don't try to like recreate like Drive to Survive, like throw that out the window, put two hosts in. They're going to be interviewing players all around, just like, I don't know, asking questions, analyzing videos, and just like doing stuff like that. I feel like this is kind of like the concept of Drive to Survive.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Worked for golf and worked for Formula One because they're completely different organizations. And their schedule is also totally different. But tennis, I don't know, find a different personality, find like a focus. I think you said it perfectly, Lingby. I feel like Breakpoint hasn't really figured out like what he wants to be and like what is its objective. Like, it doesn't really have a personality yet. Like, it's trying too hard to be Drive to Survive for tennis, which is like, it's always the recipe for, you know, being worse than the original product.
Exactly. And the sad part is like, they got people like Roddick and Courtney Wynn and Jim Courier as talking heads, and like all their parts were great, but they didn't utilize them sufficiently. I think use them as narrators throughout the whole thing, you know, like have them interview the players. Like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have like no faith that it's Breakpoint is going to get better. Like, I think we saw the numbers of like how much time people had spent watching it. And I think it was like the episodes were like longer in total, but people still spent less time watching them.
Wow. What's sad.
And I think we said this before on a podcast, but like season one was 10 episodes. Now it's down to like 6 episodes. And they're like, they're clearly floundering. Cause like the Zverev thing, we can't even begin to like rationalize. So like, if you have 6 episodes and you're already burning one off on like something that makes absolutely no sense, like, I don't know if they'll get renewed. I don't know if the creative minds behind it are sufficiently driven to like tell the story of the sport.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, if I definitely feel like they need a new concept. Like, they can't be running with the same ideas of like, as I said, like Drive to Survive. It's a concept that worked out. But I feel like you need to look at tennis and just say like, what could work in this environment? Like, forget everything that we've seen before. And of course, like on TV, this is obviously incredibly hard to do because TV is always looking for formulas. So, yeah, but it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing I'll say on this, and the thing I still can't get over, is like 16 episodes of the show, and you've still given the viewer no concept of how a tennis match actually flows and works. Like the Wimbledon final between Alcaraz and Djokovic, they cut right to the fifth set, and then show like pieces of points and like cut and pasted reactions from other parts of the match. And I'm like, you know, if you mess up highlights of that match, then maybe there is just no hope for you, because I think like that is the easiest thing to get right. Like you have a match with so many narratives and so many highlights, and you blow it that badly. Like, I don't know. Yeah, maybe the series deserves to fall into the ocean. Tennis is always going to have its hardcore fans. Maybe it's a good thing that that this happened. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it's like at least an experiment that happened, and who knows, maybe Apple TV will want to do something afterwards.
Oh, I would have more faith in them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. And on this, the women's side, actually, I don't know if you've seen my tweet as well, but like the Abu Dhabi Open, if you want to watch any tennis this week, I think you can watch the semifinals tomorrow. They're going to be, in my opinion, really good. We got, by the way, as we record this is Friday. As you listen to it, this semifinals are probably all over. So I'm sorry, I'm not as fast on the editing as I could be. But anyhow, Rybakina versus Samsonova, and Bia Haddad-Maia versus Daria Kazakina. So Kazakina has been like kind of going very quietly through the draw, I feel like, because of her recent results and other things. Like, she kind of like fell off the radar a little bit, but she's been playing really well. I think it's going to be an interesting semifinal lineup for tomorrow. And by the way, I just realized that like it's the I believe the Doha Dubai double that the WTA has now, they're both now 1000 tournaments. They're not just 1500 and 1000, are they?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Wow. So we have two, well, sunshine doubles in a sense for the WTA. We have like this two 1000 events, and then we're gonna have like Indian Wells, Miami, and then we're gonna go over to the clay court. The WTA season is even crazier.
Yeah.
I find it.
Yeah, I'm definitely past the peak of like my hardcore days, but like even then I could not comprehend really the tennis calendar, and now I've just stopped trying. But yeah. But yeah, these semifinals seem good, and I'm glad that Rybakina has kind of bounced back strongly from the Australian Open. Like she was down a set to Collins, which is not an easy position, you know. Like Collins seems to have carried over that Australian Open form herself. And Rybakina came back and won 6-3, 6-3 in the last two sets. I did notice that result, even though I'm kind of tuned out of everything right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was good to see. The WTA is still so exciting with all these players at the top. Like, I just want them all to make it far at every tournament so they can play each other. Like, I want another Sabalenka Rybakina. I want a Sabalenka Świątek on play. I want Goff to mix it up with them some more. Yeah, it's just so exciting.
Yeah. And then just, I guess, to finish on a high note, maybe on this one, like, since we are basically already expecting for, Indian Wells now, the next big tournament, and since you said you're past your peak days, but do you think you're going to be watching much of that month of tennis, the March madness in tennis, if you will?
I'll definitely catch parts of it. I mean, if there's a matchup I like, I'll definitely check that out. If we get some of those WTA matchups, if we get two of Djokovic Alcaraz Sinner playing each other, I'll definitely watch that. If we get a Djokovic Nadal, because Nadal could end up anywhere in that draw.
Yeah.
I'll track that. I'll be on Twitter, obviously, because I'm addicted to that hell app. I'm not going to be watching it religiously, I don't think.
Yeah, you're going to save yourself for the clay season, or mostly just for Roland Garros now?
I got to say, even the clay season in 2023, it's like these two-week masters are not doing it for me.
True.
I can't sustain my attention on one event for that long, that many times a year. You know what I mean? Like, it's after a major ends, I feel like everyone collectively needs that like come down period. But I don't want to do it again in a week, you know? like, I'm happy to wait a little while and have the tournaments build up to a major again. So I don't know. I mean, I'm like, I'll probably follow those a little closer than Indian Wells and Miami, but I'm not going to watch those religiously either.
Yeah, I agree. Like, if, in terms of the 2-week tournaments, like, let's see how it goes this year again. But like, for me, it's just, I just lost interest. Like, I just felt like the high wasn't, I guess you put it right, I couldn't sustain the level of attention, because like the high just gets high. And if it's like a week event, it's just kind of, it goes so fast, and like, you can see like the players going through the draw and like, okay, like this is like building up very quickly. But when the buildup is so slow after the 2-week event, and it's like, it's not a major, so you're like, well, okay, there's another one next week anyways. It's like, it doesn't really matter. I find it like that. Yeah. I definitely, for the players, I've seen all of the arguments. It's definitely better for them in regards to their physicality, because they can get like the extra day of rest. Yeah. And when you have like two masters back to back, like from Madrid, where you basically have to play every day, it does get tough on the body, and especially on the summer. In the summer, where it's like just kind of like tennis back to back to back until basically the US Open. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I guess for, I don't even want to say for the fan. I don't know if like the fans in the stadiums prefer that. I don't know if the TV ratings went down, but at least for me, and like, I guess for like some of the hardcore fans, like, it is less interesting. It's just, it kind of a little too much. It's tough to say, but it's too much tennis.
Yeah, I agree with too much tennis. Yeah, exactly. And like, I feel like with the 2-week Masters, it's kind of like, no matter what, I would prefer 1 week as a fan. Like, I'm glad that the players are getting their rest. But it's like, if the tournament is really good and it starts to feel like a major, it's sort of like, well, we already have 4 of those and that works well. And this isn't as important as the one happening in a couple of weeks. And if it's bad, then you have to wait forever for it to end. So yeah, I don't know. I think it is too much. But I mean, no one's forcing me to watch. So
that's true.
It's not much of a complaint, really.
Yeah. It's funny to say like nobody's forcing us to watch, but like that's basically what they want, right? If they could, they would force us to sit in the chair and like watch all their ads. So
right.
We'll see like how their ratings go. Is this better for TVs? Is it better for the players? I guess this is an experiment that was just like on a wait and see basis. But yeah. Okay. But for now, we are kind of like in this warm, like lukewarm part of the season, where with just like here tournaments here and there. It's great for the players to get money and prize and points. But yeah, just a little bit of a awkward part of the season. So yeah, just wait and see.
Yep. How do you feel about the prospect of tennis being deeply involved with Saudi Arabia?
I mean, is it any surprising? Like, I mean, I feel like it takes too much guts as a CEO to and as a for the board of directors as well to like say no for something. For the specific reason of like this is not morally right. I would say, for example, there are some places that are like extremely easy to say no to, like say, for example, North Korea. So but when it comes to like Saudi Arabia, they have the semblance of freedom in terms of like their cities are really rich, there's a lot of rich people going there, and like they have tourism, so in a sense it kind of looks like a peaceful place. So all the stuff that they do is not really out in the open very much. But I mean, it's tough. I mean, it's. I don't see any other company or things like that. They're like operates on a global level, I guess, tennis, and just saying no to basically free money.
Yeah, it's hard because they do have all that money, and I don't know. I feel like saying all this is futile, and it's not going to matter. But and people have made points about like, you know, the U.S. is helping Israel fund the bombing of Gaza and stuff, and like that's really bad, and so like why do things happen in the US and other countries and stuff. But dude, Saudi Arabia is like a human rights like wasteland. It's like they criminalize homosexuality, they have public executions, women have way fewer rights there, their government killed a journalist. it's really, really bad. And so I, you know, personally, I want tennis to stay the hell away from Saudi Arabia, because they don't care about tennis. And this is part of a thing they are doing called sports washing, where they're aware that their image is awful. And so they think if they pour all this money into these sporting events and make them really good, people are going to say, like, oh, they, like, did you see this amazing event in Saudi? And that's going to rehabilitate their image. And it's working, because over, and I know this because over the past year plus, I've become a boxing fan. Judge me for that all you want. But Saudi Arabia is deeply involved in boxing, and boxing has a problem where, like, they can't make the big fights and they struggle with negotiations. And Saudi Arabia stepped in and, like, they have hosted a bunch of big fights and they have supplied enough money for people to be satisfied. And now a lot of people in boxing are calling this guy Turki Alalshikh, who is like the head of their entertainment division or whatever, His Excellency. And they're like, you know, oh man, His Excellency is like saving boxing. And I'm like, hey, what are you doing? Like, it's, this is not good. And so I say all this to say, like, Saudi Arabia is going to put together some really good tennis events. This Six Kings thing, the production value is probably going to be amazing. They're going to, like, because they're going to pour so much money into this. Like, the players are going to get a ton of money for it. It's a bunch of really high-profile players playing each other. It's probably going to be a great event. But, like, so don't lose sight of the fact that Saudi Arabia are the ones putting it on, you know? Like, let's not praise them out of hand. I think I was listening to the Surf podcast with Andy Roddick earlier today, and he, John Wertheim was on, and he said that, you remember that Chris Everett and Martina Navratilova had, they wrote like this, I think like an open letter, but they basically said, like, the threshold for human rights in Saudi Arabia is way too low. So if they like meet this standard, then like a higher standard, then we can talk. And I don't know, I like that. It's not, like, I agree with, like, as things are, like, you, I don't think we want to get in bed with these people. But it's probably going to happen. Yeah, I'm just going to keep in mind that these hosts are not, not as benevolent as they would have you believe. And yeah, that's about all I have to say.
Yeah. I guess I don't really have anything to add to that. Like, I feel like, I think as fans, like, we have some sort of power in terms of, like, if there's, like, a massive, like, say, a lot of people in the US and the UK, which is probably the biggest markets in tennis, it just decided that they collectively are not going to watch, for the majority of them. Like, I feel like the ratings are so low. I do wonder, like, what would cause Saudi Arabia to do in that point, or the ATP and WTA, for that regard. And given that they just started with the ATP, I don't know if this is strategic, but I wonder if there is some kind of, well, you know what I mean, like, just putting down the women and just kind of going for the men first, like, as in, like, just they are a better product, and so some misogynist views involved in the production of, like, Six Kings first, and who knows if there's going to be a next all-women event in Saudi Arabia, even though they did, I feel like they did try to buy the WTA finals. So who knows? Like, it may happen for the WTA soon enough as well. But it seems like they were trying to hold their ground a lot better. So maybe that's the reason why they're not doing anything with the WTA, because it actually probably worked very well for the point of trying to, like, sports wash their image if they try to go for the women first. So.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what their plans are, but yeah, I mean, and I don't even necessarily look at it as, like, we can't watch these things. Like, of course you can watch. Like, you can watch anything you want. But I think, I don't know, let's not fall into their trap of, like, oh, they did such an amazing job here, you know? Like, thank you to them. Like, no. Like, let's not call anyone His Excellency, like, because these are the same people who are holding, like, public executions, like, the next week, probably. Yeah, I don't know. I just, I just think it's important to keep in mind, like, what Saudi Arabia has been, like, standing for. So, I don't know. I think it's probably a losing battle. Like, I expect this to go kind of similarly to the way it went for boxing. I'm going to keep mentioning this stuff. So,
yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's definitely, like, a super complex situation involving a lot of players and a lot of money. So whenever there's a lot of money involved, you can expect things to get a little messy, So,
yeah,
I agree with you. Like, it's definitely going to be an incredible event. And if people are watching, don't feel like we're talking down on you. Like, if you like to watch this, like, please do so. Like, yeah, just watch it. Like, watch whatever you want. Like, it's entertainment at the end of the day. So,
exactly. And, like, just don't say things like Saudi Arabia is, like, saving tennis and, like, they don't need to be praised at all. Like, they're not doing anything admirable here. They don't care about tennis. Like, if this, like you said earlier, if this doesn't make them money, like, I mean, they seem to have limitless money right now, but, you know, nothing is infinite. Like, at a certain point, don't know when that will be, but, like, at a certain point, they're not going to be able to spend with this much impunity anymore. And if tennis isn't, like, making them a profit, then you know what they're going to stop paying attention to. So, like, that's, like, they're not, like, an ally here. They're using tennis to help their image. I think as long as we remember that, that's okay.
Yeah. Well said. And, yeah, I guess on that note, we can kind of end. And, yeah, thanks for listening. Tell us your opinions on all the topics that we said: Breakpoint, Sunshine Double, clay season versus hardcore season post Australian Open, and Saudi Arabia. What do you think about any of these things? You can let us know on Twitter. You can talk to us at Tennis and Bagels. You can talk to me at Roenberg Andre, or Owen at Tennis Nation. Varsh was on you as well. You can talk to him at Varsh32K, and you can go give him a follow on Tennis One as well. He's working really hard.
Yeah, we got to get Vaughn for another podcast soon. He's too cool for us now.
He's
spending all his time making breakdown videos and analyzing data. So Vaughn, we don't forget who your original people were.
Yeah, don't forget your origins.
Right, and we hope you come back soon. No, I'm kidding. I'm not that serious. But yeah, it would be fun to do one with all three of us soon. I think. I wouldn't be against doing, like, a draw preview for some big tournament at some point. Just because then we can talk kind of aimlessly about, like, oh, who's going to win? What matchup would be interesting? And we don't really need to, like, watch a lot of tennis to be able to do that.
Yeah, for sure. I guess next one is definitely going to be Indian Wells, unless we want to do anything on the WTA side. But we'll see. We'll see what gives. The tennis season actually kind of goes by really fast. And we'll definitely be here soon with another episode. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks, Owen, for joining me today in the podcast.
Thank you. Well, always fun.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.